potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Our Friend, PG Psycho Gorman, The White Tiger, The Sister, and WandaVision. I'm also going to be talking about some news and the trailer park, as well as the home cinema roundup featuring 10 Minutes to Midnight. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I have this huge feeling of deja vu. Almost a year displaced, about 9 months displaced. I made a couple calls to some publicists this week because I'm looking ahead to 2021 and how to cover some of the movies, and every studio is doing it differently. You know, Warner Brothers is doing the day and date theatrical HBO Max releases. Disney is doing this sort of hybrid between movies releasing in theaters and Disney Plus releases, plus other TV shows on Disney Plus. You know, Universal is doing it differently because they have that 17-day window they negotiated with releasing a movie in theaters and then putting it on PVOD 17 days later. But everybody's doing it differently. So I was calling some publicists to figure out how I'm covering these things. And I said, no, let's look at the movies that are coming out. And the ones I mentioned, Nobody, that's that John Wick type movie with Bob Odenkirk. But I've been saying for months, I said, watch James Bond. No Time to Die was set for April 2nd, which is a year to the day it was supposed to come out last year. And I said, watch that. If that gets moved, you know everything's shifting. Well, guess what? Everything's shifting. And it's hysterical because I had these conversations with two separate publicists. And within a couple hours, after talking to them and saying, is No Time to Die still set for this? Is Nobody still set for this release? And both of them were like, yeah, as far as I know. And within hours, the news came out that they're shifting them. But it's not just those two movies. A whole slew of movies are being shifted. Like Cinderella was a movie, a retelling of the Cinderella story. That was supposed to come out next week or in a week or two. That's been shifted to July. And some of the bigger ones, like I mentioned, Nobody is moved from February to April 2nd, so it's basically taking No Time to Die's spot. And No Time to Die was moved into October. But there's other bigger movies, like Peter Rabbit 2 got shifted from April 2nd to June 11th. Ghostbusters got moved from June 11th to November 11th. Uncharted got moved from July 16th to February 11th, 2022. And the Addams Family sequel is the only one that's getting moved forward a bit. That's actually going up a week, but it's still in October. And then, of course, Antlers, which is from Fox Searchlight, that was originally taken completely off the schedule. Now it's dropped in October. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that has shifted around. And, you know, some of them, like Warner Brothers, moved Godzilla vs. Kong up a little bit, but that was putting it into a late March release date, and that fits into sort of the pacing they want to do with HBO Max and theatrical releases at the same time. And I think a couple weeks ago, Mobius had been moved to October, but I think that's even been moved into 2022. I know there are some people who have said, you know, this is not a good thing because the problem that people are seeing is you're not supporting theaters when you're not putting in the big movies. But it's a chicken or the egg thing. And I've been saying this for months, not a if you build it, they will come thing. First of all, you got to get the virus under control. The virus is even worse than it was 6 months ago. And it looks like stuff might, with a full vaccination program and, you know, maybe a different approach, we might get this thing under control by summer. But Hollywood pretty much has said the big tentpole movies, those movies that we need to make $1 billion, those aren't going to see the light of day until the end of this year. So we're still going to have 2021 filled with smaller or middling releases or something that is going to be day and date theater and on demand, which I honestly think that's where we're going as an industry. I think at some point there's going to be a hybrid version of stuff in theaters. There will always be the theatrical experience, but I don't think that's where the majority of people are going to be watching movies. It's just you've been locked into that. Now, with what's going on with HBO Max and Disney Plus and even stuff like Peacock, if Peacock ever starts to do something outside of the Universal model, you've got a lot of stuff that can go right to these services. So, you know, we're looking at another slow spring. It's not going to be a lot of blockbuster movies. You're not going to get the Bond movies again. And what's weird about it is that Bond movie, do you realize that it will have taken almost as long as it used to take to make a Bond movie just to get this one released? This will have been in the bag for a year and a half. Actually, it was I think supposed to originally come out in 2019, but then they shifted it because of other release dates like Star Wars or whatever, and that's when they put it in April. It used to be you'd get a new Bond movie every 2 years, pretty much from the start of them, the 62, 63, 64, 65, and then pretty much every 2 years all the way up to 1989, you got a Bond movie. And that's, I think, part of their problem is they're spending too much money on it and taking too long to do it. And that's why they get kind of stuck with a rock and a hard place, because they got this $250 behemoth that they can't release without making $1 billion. And that's why they're having such trouble with it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is a smaller movie starring Nicolas Cage, but it really caught my eye. And that is Willy's Wonderland, which opens on February 12th.
Spend the night cleaning Willy's Wonderland, and I will pay to have your car fixed. Deal?
This place has a dark history. You're here to be a human sacrifice. He's gonna die in here, but he won't listen to me. He's not trapped in here with them. We're trapped in here with him.
This is obviously inspired by the video game Five Nights at Freddy's. Now, if you don't know what that is, if you're older, you don't have kids to explain this to you, it's basically a single-person video game where you're hiding in an old pizza place, like the old Showbiz pizza place or an old Chuck E. Cheese that had the animatronic band. And in Five Nights at Freddy's, these creatures come to life and they're coming after you to attack you. They did a Banana Splits movie a couple years ago, which basically played off of that idea, which is, it was okay for what it was. I mean, it wasn't a high-budget film. This one's also playing on the haunted animatronic band, and it looks like it's going to be fun. It's Nicolas Cage going over the top, and when have we ever gone wrong with that? The next movie I want to hit really quickly is Cherry, which is coming to theaters on February 26th and on Apple TV Plus on March 12th.
Sometimes I feel like I've already seen everything that's going to happen. And it's a nightmare.
My one true accomplishment was not dying.
I have this noise in my head.
It'll stop. One day it'll go quiet.
I don't imagine that anyone goes in for a robbery if they're not in some kind of desperation.
I've been at this a while now, and it's no secret what my face looks like.
This is directed by the Russo brothers. It stars Tom Holland, and it's about a guy who's going through his life, but he's dealing with the problems that he has, but of course he falls in love with this one woman. And what's interesting with the Russo brothers is they delivered 4 big Avengers movies for Disney. But now they're wanting to do smaller films. And of course, they're using some of the actors that they've had. Like they did that 21 Bridges. I don't think they directed it, but they worked on it. And that one had Chadwick Boseman in it. This one's got Tom Holland, who of course played Spider-Man. And it's them trying to do smaller, more intimate movies without doing the big blockbuster, massive visual effects thing. It's like when Jon Favreau did Chef after doing Iron Man 1 or 2. I forget which one he did it after, but this one looks okay. It's a drama, not my exact cup of tea, but I'll talk about it more when the time comes. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Our Friend and the Sister. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. As I mentioned, with all these movies getting delayed and pushed back, at least for the time being, I'm doing a little bit more of a diversified show. I'm not just talking about movies that are in theaters and limited release, because there are some people listening to the show right now who just don't have access to theaters because they're still not open in some places. But some are, so I'm trying to cover the theatrical releases. I'm also trying to cover some at-home releases, in particular streaming services like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Disney Plus as well, and Apple TV. I'm also trying to cover a little bit of some television programming. No, I'm not doing as much broadcast. It's ABC, CBS, NBC. That's not where I'm focusing. I'm focusing on the stuff that if you're cutting the cable, the stuff that comes directly to you. But I'll try and cover a couple TV shows. I got a TV show in this. But usually I'm trying to cover something that is that I think could be highlighted or something kind of interesting on one of the streaming services. But the one I want to start off with this week is called Our Friend. And it's in theaters in limited release right now. And in that movie, a journalist's wife is diagnosed with cancer. And their ne'er-do-well family friend steps in to help out with their family and support.
Dave was my best friend. Most of the time, I felt like they were married. Mm-hmm. And I was just a bystander.
Hey, buddy, it's Matt. Wanted to see how you were doing.
Hi, Fruit Loop.
Hi, Fartface.
Hi, Fruit Loop.
Hey, how you feeling?
Tired. Thanks for being here.
I will miss it.
Can we talk for a minute, Matt?
It's going to get very hard. You're going to see things from Nicole never seen before.
You don't need to do this alone. I can come help you get to the other side of this.
I'd love to have you.
When you watch the trailer of this movie, it seems a lot more lighthearted than the movie is. And it's not that those things aren't in the movie. It's that the trailer makes it feel like it's almost like a little bit more serious of a movie than You, Me, and Dupree, where it's like you've got this goofy friend who's involved in their relationship, and there's a lot of silly scenes and whimsical moments, and there are, but they really kind of distilled a lot of the comedy and the lighthearted moments into that trailer. Most of the movie is about this woman who has cancer, and it's based on a true story. It's about a real journalist. It shows his life with his wife and their kids. And when she gets cancer, how their friends of theirs, who's kind of like the fifth wheel all the time. And they even have another friend that they talk to in the movie where he's like, he's kind of a loser and, you know, he doesn't have much of a life. And why is he still hanging around you? But it's really where a friend steps up and helps out another friend. Now, I've obviously never gone through this. Thank God. I mean, this is a horrible thing to deal with. You know, if you have a loved one, especially who's young, you know, Dakota Johnson plays the wife. So, I mean, she hadn't lived a full life yet. She was, you know, getting cancer in her 30s. And this stuff happens, and it's devastating, and it's awful, and it's rough, especially when you've got kids, particularly younger kids, who are losing a parent. And, I mean, there's a lot of emotions to unpack and deal with. And that's what most of this movie is. And to that extent, I mean, the acting's very good. I mean, Casey Affleck does his understated retread of Manchester by the Sea. He's not really the standout. And the standout, I would say, I think Dakota Johnson kind of steals the show when it comes to her parts. But I mean, she does, they do fall into, and I hate to say cliche because it's based on a true story. It's just that cliches become cliches for a very good reason. And that's because, you know, when somebody's dying of cancer, these things happen and these things are said. It's a realistic portrayal of what would happen, even if it is something that happens a lot. But she does a good job with her role, and Jason Segel as the friend, he does a fine job. This is just not my cup of tea. And also, I'm not a big fan of the structure of it. And like I said, everything that I take issue with in this movie is more of a taste issue. It's something that I don't particularly like. And I try to recognize that when I see a movie where I'm like, well, this is it's sort of this hodgepodge of jumping around the timeline, and it's almost these fly on the wall scenes. It's not a through narrative, and that's just not something that clicks with me in this format. I've seen plenty of movies that have a disjointed structure, but I just didn't like the way this was put together. But it's totally a taste issue. I don't think it's bad filmmaking. So ultimately, Our Friend, I think, is a decent movie. Personally, I'm going to say it kind of sucks, but if you like this sort of thing, if you like the tearjerker, you'll probably enjoy this one because it's effective. But still, like I said, I gotta say, it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next thing I want to talk about is The Sister. And I say thing because it's a TV series. It's a mini series on Hulu. A man with a connection to a woman's murder ends up marrying her sister and finding himself covering up his past.
What are you doing?
They're digging up the woods. We've got to move her before they dig her up.
3 years ago, my sister went out one night to a party and she just never came home. The police searched for her and they never found her.
Did you see these fox?
Not that I know of.
People who go to parties, they come home drunk. They get confused about what happened when, what happened at all.
Is this your wife? Nathan, what have you done? Why would you marry the dead girl's sister?
This originally aired in the UK, I think, in October there, and it's a four-piece miniseries. So it's a complete four-piece arc. It's not meant to have a second season. And there are four episodes, each one's about 45 minutes long. And it's a thriller. It's about this guy who, as it's stated, he is somehow connected to this woman's murder, and he finds his way into her sister's life, and they get married. And it's him sort of holding that secret below at bay. But this other guy who was involved in the incident is coming back and needing to move the body. That's sort of like the setup for the first episode. And as each episode goes on, we're revealed more about what actually happened that night, how they were involved, how deep they were in this, and exactly sort of a little bit more of the circumstances. So when you watch that first episode, and especially the first half of an episode, it's not exactly like what it seems. And it has a little bit of a potential paranormal element to it, because the guy who's also involved in the incident is a paranormal investigator. So there's that involved in there, and you're wondering, is it a haunting or is it paranoia? And it's dark, and it is a little bit of a slow burn. Overall, I think it's a decent series. I was not a huge fan of the main character. He's kind of a Kristen Stewart blank, you know, and that's one of the things that worked in the Twilight movies with her. She basically played a blank, and any teenage girl could project her own personality on her. And that's kind of how I feel they've done this character. This is not an uncommon thing to use. They have this blank canvas that you can imagine yourself being there. The main character, there's no depth of him. You don't really know much about him. You just kind of see it from his eyes. And you can empathize thinking, what would I do were I in that situation? But, you know, whether you want to root for him or not is questionable, because I don't know if I like him or not. Even now, after watching the whole series, I don't know whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. It's an interesting look at that. So that's my biggest problem with it, is that they don't develop his character as much as they really should. Everyone else is quite well developed. The victim's more well developed than the main character. It's just more that he's afraid. So it's worth your time if you like a slow burn thriller with elements of paranormal and murder along with it. It's worth checking out. So I'll say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about PG, Psycho Gorman, and the White Tiger. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about this new film called PG Psycho Gorman. Please do not let the PG confuse you. This is not a PG movie. It's definitely R-rated material. And it's R-rated material for the violence. It's sort of cartoony violence, but it's bloody and graphic. It's like a goofy werewolf movie type thing. But anyways, the story is, two kids find the body of an ancient alien warrior in their backyard, but also are able to control him and stop him from going on a rampage.
Is that fear I smell? Your planet will be torn to pieces, and I will treat your screams as I rip.
Is this yours?
The gem of Paraxenite. Whoever wields it is able to command me.
Go over there. And wait for us to come back in the morning.
You will suffer an eternity for this.
Bye! It was nice meeting you.
It would be nicer if you were dead.
The guy who directed this, he's directed two movies I've seen before. One of them is The Void, which was a much more serious horror film about this hospital that kind of opened this portal to evil dimension. And that's actually not a bad little movie. So if you ever get a chance to watch The Void, that's good. But that one is not relying on nostalgia or humor. There is another movie he directed called Manborg. Manborg was certainly a throwback to action cyberpunk movies, something like a little goofier than The Terminator. But it's one of those that it handles a comedy by existing within the comedy, as opposed to telling the joke and winking to the audience. It just overplays the joke or overplays the scenes, so it turns into somewhat humorous moments in the movie. But within the movie itself, it's still kind of delivering everything with a straight face. Psycho Gorman plays off of the trope that was very popular in the 80s and even a little bit into the 90s of these kids that find something, whether it's an alien like E.T. Of course, E.T. was way more benevolent than this, or something like The Gate. If you ever saw that movie from, like, I think it was 1987, about these kids that they dig up in the backyard, basically a gateway to hell. And parents are gone for the weekend, and this kid and his sister have to stop these evil demons from coming after them. But the idea of these kids digging up something has been used many times in movies, and they kind of play it off here. And the kids are, they're about 9 or 10. They're like just before you'd hit puberty. And the girl, who's a little bit bossy, she's sort of like a Lucy Van Pelt. If you were to put Lucy Van Pelt in this movie and give her a talisman that allows her to control a psychotic robot, that's what this movie's like. Which I think is a hoot. Because, of course, he's walking around, you heard it in the trailer, he's walking around going, I will drink your blood and destroy you. And she's like, be quiet, go sit over there, put your hand on your head. And it still plays off the fact that this guy is this insane warrior from another world, but he kind of befriends these kids, and they, of course, have aliens coming after him and other nemesis coming after him, and there's the squad that patrols the galaxy. They send somebody down, and their parents get involved in it. And the stuff with the parents gets a little bit, almost a little bit too obvious with the humor. They're almost in the joke a little too much. But the stuff with the kids and Psycho Gorman, the alien, it's hilarious. And it's hilariously violent too. I mean, like, there's scenes where he like rips one of the aliens' face right off and he eats one alive. I mean, there's blood all over the place, but it's this goofy sort of Kerosaur blood that you'd get in movies back in the late 80s, early 90s, long before you had any sort of real digital effects. And so it's just a lot of rubber suits. And it sort of also has some of the monsters kind of remind me a little bit of, you know, like something you'd see on Power Rangers or in Inferman, you know, one of those Hong Kong action movies where they're just giant rubber suits with tentacles. It's hilarious. I gotta say, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed watching it. There was just the right balance of extreme elements and humor and nostalgia, but it's still a heck of a lot of fun. If you've ever watched these movies, these kind of films as a kid in the 80s or 90s, you should enjoy this. I enjoyed Psycho Gorman way more than I probably should have. So I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The White Tiger. This is on Netflix. It premieres this week. A poor kid from Bangalore finds a way to manipulate the class system in India to rise to prominence.
Since I was a boy,
the desire to be a servant had been hammered into my skull.
I, Balram Halwai, I drove the car. I was alone in the car. They made me sign that confession.
I would have to become the creature that gets born only once every generation.
The White Tiger.
This is based on a book, a best-selling novel. I've not read it, and I'm not going to. Indian movies in general are certainly becoming more visible in America, especially the last 20 years. And that's partly because of the rise of the Indian population. A lot of Indian immigrants have come to America, so we have a much larger representation of Indians and Indian Americans. But also just because of the fact that the Indians as a culture just love movies. Any studio that ignores the Indian and an Indian American market is a fool, because that's a huge market to go after. They will come out and spend money and go in droves to see some of these just purely Indian movies that, you know, the average English speaking white guy like me isn't even on my radar. But the Indians as a culture are passionate about movies. And so this one is another one that looks at, you know, sort of the a lot of Indian issues. And it approaches a very similar story we've seen before. A person who starts off in poverty and trying to build his way up and make a name for himself. And they reference Slumdog Millionaire. They don't name check it, but they reference it at one point where they're like, well, this just isn't a game show where you win a million rupees. It still kind of tells that same rags to riches type story. This one almost feels like it's a biopic, but hopefully it's not, because there's some pretty horrible things that happen in this. And it really dissects the class system in India, and it dissects it against both capitalism and socialism, because they have struggles with that in their society. And it's essentially saying capitalism is corrupt the way it's run, and socialism is corrupt the way it's run. Ultimately, government is corrupt, is sort of this approach it's using, and the corruption's kind of out there and well-known. And whereas, at least in America, we try to hide it a little bit. It's just as corrupt at times, but, you know, we try to hide it a little bit more. But in this movie, and it shows the huge differential between abject poverty, like in this little village in Bangalore where he comes from, and where he ends up working as a driver for basically a kingpin. And you see this wealth disparity that is very typical in Indian movies. So it is sort of eye-opening. I don't know if it's good for an Indian audience, because I'm not Indian. But I would imagine it deals with a lot of sort of some levels of Indian culture that just went past me. I remember watching Life of Pi with a friend of mine who's Indian. He's, you know, he's from Southern India. And we were talking about the movie afterwards, and he was like dissecting some weird thing that this guy saw in one of the gods in this picture. And I look at him and I go, Srinath, that is beyond me. I didn't notice that at all, because I'm not Indian. I didn't grow up with this in my background. So I'm sure that somebody with the culture experience will find a very different movie. My problem with the film is not, I don't think bad guys don't always have to get punished and good guys don't always have to win in a movie, but there needs to be a little more reason behind it. This seemed somewhat weirdly arbitrary and shifting good versus bad. So I think it had some ethical focus issues, I guess you could say, that weren't fully addressed, that sort of kept me from really enjoying it. But overall, I think it's an interesting look. But I'm still going to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about WandaVision and the home cinema roundup with a spotlight on 10 Minutes to Midnight.
And the Magnificent.
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews, or rather with the television reviews. This one's technically a television series. It's WandaVision, and this is actually wasn't meant to be, but this is the first return we've had to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We were originally supposed to get Black Widow last summer, but we didn't, which means that Spider-Man Far From Home, I think, was the last Marvel movie to come out. And we weren't supposed to have more than a year, but we did. We had about a year and a half, and now we've got WandaVision, and that's on Disney+. And they're releasing it the way they did The Mandalorian. This is, I think, going to be Disney+'s strategy for their ongoing series. And it's interesting because there was a note that came out in the news this week where Netflix kind of praised Disney for what it's doing with Disney Plus, you know, sort of enriching its library and enriching its slate. Then they kind of gave a little nod of, yes, but you don't have a Bridgerton yet. I'm like, well, you didn't say that when Mandalorian was playing every week. But the difference is Disney's taken a very different approach to series than what Netflix does. Netflix has the binge watch platform where they drop all episodes of a show and you get to watch it in a, and that will pump up its algorithm. That means that somebody, if there's 10 episodes of the series, you get 10 watches. And suddenly that just boosts up their algorithms, I would imagine. That's how Netflix has always done it. Disney is slowly leaking stuff out. And that's what they did with Mandalorian. That's what they're going to be doing with WandaVision. Now, what happened was last week they premiered two episodes of it. This week there's another episode out, and then there's going to be a new episode every week. So let's talk about this series. Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch, and Vision find themselves in a classic TV sitcom as they try to make their life together.
Wanda and Vision, aren't we a five pair?
This is our home now. I want us to fit in.
Oh, this is gonna be a gas!
Where did you two move from? How long have you been married, and why don't you have children yet?
This is really happening.
Like days of old. We are an unusual couple, you know?
Oh, I don't think that was ever in question.
This is really out of the box, which I think is great. I mean, I love how out of the box it is. And it shows the two of them essentially showing up at this idyllic black and white Ozzie and Harriet type house. And I don't know whether this first episode is meant to be Ozzie and Harriet or Leave It to Beaver, but it's one of those 1950s family sitcoms where they don't have kids, where, you know, you've got the picture perfect housewife and the picture perfect lawn, and the guy goes to work and he's annoyed with his boss, but he's sort of this bumbling guy. And that's the setup. And they really do mimic the old TV series really, really well. And each episode follows the template of a different series. Like I said, the first one's Leave It to Beaver, Ozzie and Harriet. The second episode is very clearly Bewitched. They even have a little animated opening. And the whole point is, oh, well, don't let everybody know that I have magical powers and you're a sentient robot, you know. And that's sort of the gist of that episode. And the third episode is a play off the Brady Bunch, because it's suddenly in color, and you've got the hairstyles and the clothes, and their house looks very much like a Brady Bunch house. Again, they don't have kids yet. But that's sort of the template they use. And the brunt of the show seems to be them playing off these sitcoms, basically recreating the sitcoms. And that's entertaining, especially if you spent your days, like I did when I was younger, watching a lot of TV series from the 60s and 70s. It's kind of fun to watch them kind of recreate not just the look of it, but the flavor and the way it's shot. Those are kind of cool. And I also got to say, Wanda, her American sitcom accent, that how she talks like this all the time, I don't know, that kind of does it for me. I mean, forget that Slovakian-ish thing that she had in the movies from whatever fake country she's from. I like the Wanda with the sort of smart-talking American accent. So, I don't know, there's a look into my little idiosyncrasies. But anyways, I mean, it's funny, but after watching them sort of ape the sitcom for 20 minutes, you're like, okay, what else do you got? Because how does this fit in? And they have little tidbits in each episode, and they reveal just a little bit more. They peel back just a little bit that there's something else underneath. There's a reason this is happening, but they take a while to get there. And I've seen the three episodes, like, yeah, it's good, and it's fun to watch them play into that sitcom structure. But I am saying, okay, let's get to the story. Let's get to why this is happening. And then it might be more fun to rewatch it. But right now, I want to, I know there's stuff happening. Let's get to the point. I hope that starts happening in episode 4, 5, and 6, and not episode 10, 12, and 13. But still, it's got me intrigued. And like I said, you know, Wanda in her sort of American 50s style kind of turns me on. So, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is a film that came out on video on demand and on DVD this week, and that is 10 Minutes to Midnight. An aging radio DJ finds herself as a potential victim to vampires on the night she develops a midlife crisis.
I'm the one who convinced Bob to give you one last show.
You got bit by a wild animal tonight. Who knows what kind of diseases those things are carrying?
You sure you're not seeing anything, Amy? Anything that's not really there?
Oh! There's Amy!
Do you want to bite me again, Amy Marlowe?
Look at me!
Hey!
It's just one of those nights.
There's never been a night like this one.
The anchor point that they're really pulling on this movie is Caroline Williams stars as the aging DJ. Now, if you're not familiar with your horror movie actresses, Caroline Williams was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. She played Stretch, who was, you guessed it, a radio DJ. And they brought back Caroline Williams, who's been active for years. I mean, in the 2000s, she really sort of kind of played her street cred as a horror movie actress. And since she played Stretch in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, that's a very famous, well-remembered, well-loved movie in the horror community. So even though she's been in a bunch of horror stuff recently, they're sort of anchoring it around her, even though it's not the character of Stretch anymore. It's a different woman. I'm on the fence on this movie. And the reason I'm on the fence is because there's some elements that I think are kind of cool, actually. I think placing it in a radio station is neat. I've seen movies like that. I think that they can work in that limited location. I've been in the radio stations in the middle of the night. They can be kind of spooky. And I'm talking about like independent radio stations. I've been in like real nice, slick, brand new offices, but I've also been in ones that are like essentially in the basement of a building. And that's the ones that can get kind of creepy and spooky and scary. So, I mean, that's just my personal connection to the material. And there's elements to it I like. It moves. I will say this. The thing moves and it keeps throwing different things at you, but it gets weirder and weirder as it goes on. It's kind of hard to make sense of it at times. But I'd rather have that than it just be screaming zombies attacking somebody or something like that. There's some interesting stuff woven in there and showing her dealing with the fact that, you know, she, like I said, she's going through a midlife crisis. She's older. She's no longer the 20-year-old intern at the radio station. She's had a career, but she really can't go and do anything else, the character. And she's sort of fracturing and coming apart at this. And you don't know if it's because she was she bitten by a vampire or did that really happen? Is there something else going on in there? Are there monsters? So there's a lot of guessing to go along with it. I don't think it fully resolves itself as well as it should or it could. But I mean, I wouldn't recommend this to people who aren't fans of horror movies. But if you're a horror fan, it does have some roots in horror history. You know, like I said, having Caroline Williams, who's from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre film, or part two, at least. And it also has some different elements to it, and it keeps you guessing as to try and figure out what's real and what's not. So there is some interesting stuff going on. But Leah, like I said, it's not for everybody. I would never show this to my mom. But, you know, a friend of mine who might be interested in horror movies, it's different, and I'll tell you that. So I'm gonna say I'm really on the fence on it, but I'm gonna teeter into the kind of rocks territory just because it's a little bit different. It is not a ripoff of anything else I've seen, which is a big deal. You don't always get that with horror movies. And it's a limited set. It's sort of like a bottle episode, which is kind of cool, even though it's a standalone movie. You know, it's worth checking out if you're a horror fan.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Little Things and Palmer, and that is it. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.